Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. This is a Sound Health Options Happy Hour show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards, I think. I think I can hear you, Sherry. Are you there?
Hello. Can you hear me through WebEx?
Yes.
I can hear.
I can hear. I'm not sure where I'm hearing you, but I hear you in my right ear, so that indicates something. Wait a second.
I have no. My mouth whatsoever, so I don't know.
I hear you at both Blog Talk. I hear you at both Blog Talk Radio and WebEx.
But I can't do anything, Richard.
Yeah, I understand. Did you unplug your mouse and plug it back in?
I will try that. Let's see what happens. Does this always happen right before, minutes before a show?
Always guaranteed before a show. To everybody.
I'm
always scurrying for a few minutes right before the show starts. It's always the excitement of live. Thank you, Susan Snowden. Let's blame it on the solar flares. I think so, too. I recorded a two-hour... I was out of the area on Saturday recording a two-hour lecture that when I got done with the lecture, I found out that the cable or some connector to my device made it sound like the person was talking through cotton for the entire two-hour lecture, so that was bad. In the same category of, like, you know, in a venue where I've recorded often and I've had no problems whatsoever, suddenly there was no sound. Now, somebody else is now the host. Did you reboot it, WebEx, Sherry?
No.
Now Judy is now the host over there, Judy Van Dyne. Maybe it has something to do with the unplugging.
Okay, I'm.
And you're not recording.
I'm not doing anything. I am dead
okay.
In the water. There's not a thing I can do.
Wow.
I've plugged and unplugged and no mouse.
No mouse, no nothing. Yeah, because I don't see anything moving. We're on whiteboard over at the WebEx. I hear you, but I don't. I see nothing happening.
Oops, I just saw the mouse fly by really quick, so I don't know where it's going.
Or why it's jumping so quickly.
Or where it's even
going.
I
see, supposedly George is speaking, but I'm not hearing him, but I don't know. I may have that sound muted because it echoes in my own head. George, were you just talking? Yep. Is that a good thing?
Okay. I have a mouse, but it won't do anything.
And you're no longer the host at WebEx. It looks like George is talking, but I'm not hearing him.
My computer now says wait. And
oh, boy.
Mic is open.
George's.
Yeah, my mouse is still not working. I would just prefer that we play another show if you have one. Queued up. Nothing is working here.
Let's see. I could. Let me see what I have here.
We could play last week's from Jade Helm. If anybody missed
that's
it.
Not. Yeah, unfortunately, that's not in queue here. I'm looking at what's actually locally available on now.
I don't know what you.
Wow.
Heard.
I did just then. I think George's mic is open. Or
well, I
to take over by the space aliens. You can't? Wow.
I can't shut it off. I'm just going to crash my computer, and I'm going to get off WebEx, and you play what you need to play, because I can't stand that noise.
Yeah, got it. Okay.
All right.
Well, hi there, everybody. Of course, now. Okay, so we still have it out. Okay. So that means we're losing the WebEx audience. We still have an audience over at Blog Talk Radio. And
but
I think what I will do. What? Go ahead, Sherry. I still hear you.
I was going to talk about neuroplasticity and do people's vocal print, because I think this is really important in terms of the shooters that have
a
problem.
Yeah.
And I've got things for nutrient and neurological inflammation to share and show people. And I just think my computer just went absolutely bluey.
Berserk.
So...
Well, I think what
I
think what I could do is I see that we have a William Davis show here, and I could play that, and we could reschedule this so that you can get your computer fixed. Does that seem like a good way to go?
That would be great.
Okay.
I still
want. So everybody over at Blog. So I definitely want us to do this show, but I think we will do it when everything is actually working.
Yeah, because my materials are even on the computer. My big thing about this and doing neuroplasticity and the brain and keeping the brain holy while you're trying to get things up and running is they're blaming the guns here on what happened and not the drugs that most of these kids were taking that did all these shootings. So we wanted to examine that, and we wanted to give people a chance to win a copy of the software. So... if you would play the other one, that would be great, and I will work on getting the computer fixed.
All right. I'm going to still... So for everybody here for neuroplasticity, we will reschedule this show because we certainly have a lot to talk about this. And so I am going to start the author of Wheat Belly, Dr. William Davis. I'm hoping that this...
along the same lines, it poisons your brain.
Right. It poisons your brain. It just seems friendly, but it's poisoning your brain. Here we go.
Thanks, Richard.
I mean, there's so many things out of your book that just affirm that, you know, wheat is something you don't want in your diet. But one of the things that I think that is really a powerful thing for people to understand is the, you know, tell us about wheat's stunning effect on blood sugar. I think that's like a sleeper that people don't know about.
Yeah, it's one of the most obvious, and it should be among the most widely talked about phenomena surrounding wheat, and that is its exceptional high glycemic index. So this is not something we had to concoct or study in detail. It's in every table of glycemic index, right? So every table that lists how high blood sugar goes by this thing called glycemic index shows that the glycemic index of whole wheat is around 72. Table sugar, that is sucrose, depending on which study you look at, 59 to 65. So both are high, but the crazy thing is that whole wheat is very high, in fact, a bit higher than table sugar. So we're told to eat more of this stuff. Is it any surprise that we have a world of people struggling with high blood sugars, otherwise known as insulin, I'm sorry, as diabetes or prediabetes? So we now have the world's worst epidemic of diabetes and prediabetes. Is it any wonder?
It just leaves me, it actually leaves me speechless. I mean, it was one of the most shocking things. I mean, I was familiar with allergies and a lot of the conditions that you talked about, but that was the one that really took me off guard the most. And it's so, you know, what happened to wheat? Do you think that it's the same thing is true of the einkorn, which is the heritage or the heirloom point of origin of wheat? Was that the same? Do you think it's equally as high in glycemic index, or is it the mutations and nasty things that have been done to wheat that have created it into this kind of like bad food?
I think every step we take back, Richard, every step we take back further in time to the more primitive forms of wheat, so we could go back to kamut and spelt, or even further back to emmer and einkorn. Einkorn, of course, being the true ancestor of all wheat, 14 chromosomes compared to the modern forms of wheat, 42 chromosomes. Every step back, it gets more benign, less harmful. I don't think, though, that we ever get to a point where grains are entirely benign. And we know that because, not because of modern studies, but because of what we see in humans. Years ago, the anthropologists tell us that when humans first incorporated grains, So we're talking about Einkorn and Emmer in the Fertile Crescent and in Europe. We're talking about, as well, maize and teosinte in the Americas and millet and sorghum in sub-Saharan Africa, rice in the swamps of Asia. When humans first added grains, that is, they converted from a scavenger hunter-gatherer lifestyle and spied these things growing wild, and they ate them, wild grains. There was an explosion of tooth decay, tooth loss, tooth abscess. There was loss of height, shrinkage of bone diameter. There was evidence for iron deficiency, and for the first time in primate history, the human brain shrunk by about 200 cc's. In other words, when we added the ancient grains, wild grains, not the stuff of Monsanto, but wild grains, humans paid a price. So grains represent a compromise in health. They're accessible, cheap, easy calories, stuff we can store, stuff we can reconfigure into numerous shapes and sizes and configurations, but it's a compromise we strike. So if we convert from eating animal organs and meat and nuts and the edible parts of plants and leaves and insects and all those kinds of things we would eat living outdoors, and we incorporate grains, we inevitably and unavoidably strike a compromise in health. And that's true of ancient grains. It's the most true, though, of modern grains, because modern grains have been changed by the efforts of geneticists and agribusiness.
Are you saying this is just not wheat, but it's oat and barley and rye and all of them?
Well, it's all a matter of degree. So none of those other grains, millet, bulgur, buckwheat, oats, none of those have, for instance, the gliadin protein of wheat that stimulates appetite by acting as an opiate and binds to the opiate receptor of the human brain to stimulate calorie consumption. None of those other grains have wheat germ agglutinin, the protein unique to wheat that destroys your gastrointestinal tract. None of those have the new forms of alpha amylase inhibitors. These are the new proteins causing allergies in kids. So those things have none of those kinds of effects. They don't trigger autoimmune diseases. They don't have the bowel leaky effect of the gliadin protein. But all those other grains, the non-wheat grains, just raise your blood sugar sky high. So we don't want to make the mistake of nutritionists. And that is, if we replace something bad, wheat, with something less bad, non-wheat grains, and there's a health benefit, and there is, then a whole bunch of less bad thing must be good for you. This is the flawed logic of nutrition, and dietitians use this over and over and over, and this is not clean thinking. This is sloppy thinking, and it leads us down some bad paths. So if we replace wheat with non-wheat grains, we will have an improvement in health. There's no question about that. But we can still be quite diabetic. We can still have cataracts. We can still have cancer, heart disease, hypertension, and diabetes from those non-wheat grains. So what I've been trying to advocate is, one, wheat is the biggest problem, the worst of the worst, that is particularly the modern high-yield semi-dwarf strains created by genetics research. Let's not replace it with another problem, though. We don't replace it with gluten-free foods, right? Those are made with junk carbohydrates, cornstarch, rice starch, tapioca starch, potato starch, the foods that have even a higher glycemic index than whole wheat. We don't replace it with non-wheat grains if we can avoid it. So those of us with a choice should minimize or even eliminate non-wheat grains if you have that choice. You know, if you have kids who are more tolerant to blood sugar phenomena than us adults, maybe they can get away with a little bit of buckwheat in their cookies, for instance. But if you're given a choice, you want to minimize those things.
We've had people say, I just can't get my fingers off wheat. Now, if they're that bad, is there any enzyme or anything they can take that will help?
Yes, opiate-blocking drugs.
Wow.
I'm pulling your leg. So I'm not advocating anybody takes opiate-blocking drugs. But the reason people say that, they think it's because it's part of culture and custom and habit. Nuh-uh. It's because there's an opiate in wheat. So they are opiate addicts. So there's this protein called gliadin, which is reduced to smaller polypeptides in the gastrointestinal tract, and these things bind to various opiate receptors in the human brain. So the combination of opiate receptors is a little different from that of morphine or that bound by heroin. So the effect's different. It doesn't provide pain relief like morphine, doesn't provide euphoria like heroin. It only stimulates appetite and causes an addictive relationship with foods. So people who say that are not saying it's too inconvenient. What they're saying is, I'm a helpless opiate addict. I'm having a hard time stopping. So it's just like the alcoholic who says, I have a hard time not drinking two fists of vodka a day. So do we say, well, cut back, John, cut back a little bit, and you'll be fine. Doesn't work that way, right? You got to stop. You got to stop this thing that triggers addictive behavior and causes calorie intake to increase. And by the way, it's that same effect, that same protein, the gliadin protein, that also causes other effects in people who are susceptible. So if we took kids with ADD, ADHD, or autistic spectrum disorder, it causes behavioral outbursts and difficulty with attention span. In people with bipolar illness, they get the mania triggered by the gliadin protein of wheat, this opiate-like compound. People with depression have depression triggered. People with binge eating disorder and bulimia have 24-hour-day intrusive food obsessions. That all this stuff goes away when you get rid of the opiate in wheat. So when I hear those kinds of things, what I hear are the laments of a hopeless opiate addict.
Wow.
So we have to figure out an antidote to the gliadin protein?
Well, there is an antidote, but it's not a nice antidote. It's the drug naloxone, which is an injectable opiate blocker, and there's also an oral equivalent called naltrexone. Naltrexone is already on the market because heroin addicts take it. So heroin addicts who try not to return to heroin will take this drug, naltrexone, and it blocks the high of heroin. So even if they do shoot up or snort or whatever, they won't get the high and they don't have the same kind of drive to return to it. So we can get that drug if we wanted to. In fact, the drug company filed this application to the FDA about 2 years ago. It's still pending for naltrexone as a weight loss drug. So if we have a hopelessly opiate-addicted population, we can treat that population with opiate-blocking drugs. Of course, my answer is that's absurd. How about we just get rid of the opiate? That is this gliadin protein of wheat. The gliadin today is different. We know that for an absolute fact. I'm always surprised when the wheat lobby and wheat trade groups say that Davis says gliadin has changed. It's not. The data are overwhelming. There have literally been thousands of scientific publications in the agricultural genetics literature demonstrating that the gliadin of the 21st century is very different from the gliadin, say, in 1960. We know that for an absolute fact. These proteins have been mapped out in their amino acid structure. Today, they're very different than they were. And today, they are much more powerful opiates than they used to be.
One of the things that we do here at the center, and it's the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology, is we take a group of people who say, okay, I am craving wheat, and we look at their biology by way of bioacoustics. And one of the things consistently that we've found is they are low in serine. And if we supplement them with serine, there is less of a craving for bread. Can you explain that in any way?
No, I can't. I've never heard that before. That's very interesting. I've never heard that before.
Well, I think
no, I can't elaborate on it.
Okay. I looked up wheat, and it does contain serine, so that may be part of the addictive part of it. I need to go look at serine as part of addiction. I didn't have never thought of doing that.
Very interesting question. Sorry, I don't know anything about it.
I want to jump back for a moment. Did I hear you say wheat? Did I hear you use a phrase along the lines about wheat destroying the gut, an action of wheat destroying the gut?
Yeah. So as you likely know, acid reflux, heartburn, esophagitis, exceptionally common conditions. Lots and lots of people that market, by the way, for the acid suppressing drugs is a worldwide nearly $100 billion a year market. I mean, it's an enormous world of people who have these gastrointestinal problems. Likewise, bowel urgency, that is explosive bowel movements. People can't control themselves. People tell me, I know every rest stop along the highway, every fast food joint, because I never know when I'm going to need a toilet, like with no notice whatsoever, often called irritable bowel syndrome. And when people get rid of wheat, easily 90% of people who've been struggling, even for years, with those two conditions have relief within 3 to 5 days. The people with other conditions of the gastrointestinal tract, such as Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, which can be devastating, as you know. These people are often on multiple drugs. They have cramps, diarrhea, and even hemorrhage, have dramatic improvement and occasionally outright cure, though it takes many months to happen. So these complex inflammatory diseases don't disappear within hours or days. They require weeks to months to recede all that inflammation and destruction that the disease has done. So removing wheat, and it's probably mostly two things. It's the wheat germ agglutinin and the gliadin. Those two things we know are very toxic to the human gastrointestinal tract. If I purify, for instance, wheat germ agglutinin, which is indigestible, by the way, in the human gastrointestinal tract, if I purify 1 milligram, which is a pinned, a tiny little quantity, and I give it to a rat, its intestinal tract is destroyed. The average American who eats healthy whole grains gets between 10 and 20 milligrams per day. So it's no wonder we have this world of people having to see their gastroenterologist, who of course does an endoscopy, then does a colonoscopy, and says, well, I don't see anything wrong here. Take your Protonix, Pepcid, all those drugs, the $100 billion market of drugs. So there's this ignorance, this incredible ignorance of this effect. Yet most people can cure themselves of these conditions just by not eating wheat.
And you're advocating that this is an absolutely forever thing. Absolute, they don't eat wheat ever for any reason.
But it's like cigarettes. So if you smoke cigarettes and did damage to your lungs, the only way not to have any more damage is never smoke again. So the effect of wheat is that powerful. Many people are helpless, as those people who come to you and say, I can't stop. They really have a hard time. I've had people sobbing because they know from prior experience. When, let's say, 10, 12 hours have gone by, they're shaky and anxious. They get paranoid. They can have all kinds of weird emotions, dark emotions, because that's the withdrawal. That is the opiate withdrawal. And by the way, about 40% of people experience a very distinct opiate withdrawal syndrome when they get rid of wheat. It's about 5 days of nausea, headache, depression, and fatigue. A lot of people can't work. They can't go to school. They can't do their job. They have to take time off. It can last longer, but the average is about 5 days. You can provoke it, by the way. You can provoke somebody's wheat withdrawal immediately by giving them this one of these opiate-blocking drugs. And so it's a very, very distinct and very unpleasant process to get rid of wheat for many people. So many people are intuitively terrified of this prospect. But it's just like that alcoholic. There's no way to become a non-alcoholic or a former alcoholic except not to drink alcohol. So it's the same, very same process here. But I will tell you on the positive side, I have never in my career, over 20 years of practicing medicine and cardiology, I have never seen anything as powerful in gaining control over health, appetite, impulse, behavior, mental health. Nothing as powerful as getting rid of this thing created by agribusiness and genetics called wheat.
Well, how can people ever recover from the damage?
Yeah, I think most do. There are people, there's a minority, who are left with residual damage, and these people often respond well to probiotics. Some have to take pancreatic enzymes because they've experienced either a decrease in the intensity of their cholecystokinin hormone to cause their pancreas to release digestive enzymes. Some people actually experience low-grade pancreatic damage. There can be dysbiosis, that is, changes in the number and types of bacteria in the gastrointestinal tract. So there can be residual damage that sometimes needs to be addressed specifically. But most people do enjoy full recovery. Now, it depends on what you mean. So let's say I have a person who's had 30 years of intrusive 24-hour-a-day food obsessions, and it was diagnosed as binge eating disorder. This is the person stuffing themselves silly 3 o'clock in the morning, sitting at the refrigerator, and then in their shame go to the bathroom, put their finger down their throat and throw it up. And they've done that for 30 years, and they've yo-yoed their weight up and down, and they lost all their teeth because they were vomiting so much the stomach acid ruined their teeth, and it ruins their social relationships and their family, et cetera. So when you go wheat-free, you lose 80 pounds. You're no longer diabetic, your acid reflux is better, your bowel urgency is gone, the joint pain you had is gone, the funny rash and dandruff you had is gone, but you don't regrow teeth and you don't regrow your relationship. So yes, you can recover fully, most people do, but in the wake of losing the wheat, you can be left with all kinds of things that happen because of the, I call this an abusive relationship. If we consume wheat, it's like living with an abusive spouse. If you get rid of him, yeah, you'll be rid of all his abuse, but but you might be left with scars and broken bones and financial ruin. So, yeah, so the sooner people do this, the better. Now, I should mention, this is an economically unfeasible message, right? We find ourselves in this peculiar place where agribusiness has worked it out with the assistance of the USDA, FDA, and U.S. government, such that 50% of human calories now come from the high-yield agribusiness-generated monocrops, wheat, corn, and soy. 50% of all human calories. 20% of human calories come from wheat. So this occurred by design. This is not an accident. It is largely by design of wheat lobbyists, agricultural lobbyists, as well as the USDA, several senators and congressmen who have been influential in designing agricultural legislation. This is hard to control in a top-down fashion, a disparate nation of 1 million to 5 million family farms. It's much easier to control large agribusiness, vertically integrated, where now we have 10,000-acre tracts of monocrop wheat, corn, and soy. So this is by design to a large degree. So it is economically unfeasible for the world to go wheat-free. So the world's not going to go wheat-free. It's those of us who have enough knowledge, insight, willpower, and financial ability to do so.
Wow. I want to jump for a moment and ask you, you are a cardiologist. What drove you to becoming the wheat belly doctor?
Well, Richard, so one of the things I could not accept a number of years ago was this notion that all coronary disease, that is heart attacks, stents, and bypass, should be addressed with procedures. That's what's done now. That's why we have these big hospitals with $80 million cardiovascular programs. That's why they run TV ads and billboards and have people with their masks on and scrubs. So heart disease, I call the monetization of heart disease. That's what heart care is now. Well, I became very disenchanted with that. I come from that world. I was a guy who was doing heart procedures morning till night. I was, in fact, I think I was pretty good at it. I was putting in stents, and, balloon angioplasty, laser angioplasty, excimer laser, atherectomies, rotational atherectomy, all that kind of stuff. But it started to appear to me to be kind of stupid. That is, people come in for their complex procedures because they were almost having a heart attack. You fix their arteries. They come back 4 months later, need some more work. They come back 8 months later, need some more work. Come back, they need bypass. They have a stroke. So the disease itself continues. All you've done is delay some of the catastrophes. So I started asking, is there a better way to control this? And that took me down a number of unique pathways. But one of the pathways, and this is quite well sorted out even in the conventional literature, is that you cannot have diabetes or prediabetes and have full control over your coronary disease risk. So it's just fact. You can't have full control as long as those conditions persist. Well, the conventional answer, of course, give these people lots of drugs. Well, I said that I don't like that idea. I'm going to try to find other ways. So one of the ways I explored was removing high glycemic index foods. So, of course, if you look at the table like we talked about, you'll see that whole wheat's at the top. Now, white bread's not that much better, so they're both bad. It's not that one is better, one's good. They're both bad. So I asked people to remove wheat from their diet for the purposes of reducing blood sugar. So they do this. And, of course, I had to ask them, don't replace it with jelly beans and ice cream. Try to eat good foods. And they did this. And they'd come back 3 months later, 4 months later, and they'd be 30 pounds lighter. Their waist would be 3, 4, 5 inches smaller. And they started to tell me things like, what do you think? My rheumatoid arthritis is so much better. I stopped two of the drugs. My asthma is gone for the first time in 10 years. This funny rash, biopsied 3 times. I was given steroid creams, disappeared within 5 days. My acid reflux is gone. My bowel urgency is gone. My skin, my leg swelling is gone. My depression lifted. They stopped my antidepressant. My dandruff is gone. My seborrheic rash along my nose is gone. My psoriasis that didn't respond to treatments on my elbows disappeared. In other words, I started seeing all these stories. It happened over and over and over again. It became clear this was not just some weird coincidence after it happened several hundreds and thousands of times. Then I started doing it on purpose in everybody. That is, I asked everybody to remove wheat, and that's when I saw all kinds of unexpected things unfold.
Well, is there something that, before people get to this critical state, is there something they can watch for? Like, I've seen the people that come in here, their bellies almost look like Humpty Dumpty, and their stomach is very hard. Is that an indicator that this is a problem?
Yeah, those people, of course, are very inflamed. So they have high measures of inflammation, like C-reactive protein. They have lots and lots of visceral fat. That is the fat that encircles the abdominal contents, including the intestines. This fat looks like pus, by the way, under the microscope. It's filled with inflammatory cells. So these people typically have low HDL cholesterol, high triglycerides, high insulin, insulin resistance, poor responsiveness, high blood sugars, hypertension. So it's this whole constellation of things. Now, wheat's not the only thing that does this, of course. You can get quite fat and diabetic by eating fructose, for instance, high fructose corn syrup, sucrose, and agave nectar. So there are other problems in diet, but nothing else, Sherry, comes with its very own opiate effect, that is the appetite-stimulating effect of the gliadin protein. So sucrose, table sugar, is not good for it. It's terrible. It's 50% fructose, but it does not have an appetite stimulant with it. It doesn't cause bowel urgency. It doesn't have weak germ gluten to cause acid reflux. It doesn't have unique alpha amylase inhibitors to cause allergies. So wheat stands apart, but wheat is also a big part of the reason why those tense abdomens, those big fat tense abdomens, are created, because I call wheat the perfect obesogen. The perfect food to make you fat and obese and diabetic, because nothing can stimulate appetite like the gliadin protein of wheat, and wheat raises blood sugar, of course, among the highest of all foods. So it is a perfect, it's also a perfect cause of inflammation. So those people do have real problems with wheat, but also can have problems with other carbohydrates.
Oh, I just, as I was looking, I found a wonderful article, 5 clues that your excess weight is caused by gluten. So we can give people that address. It's just wheat belly gluten, and up it comes. It's an article with Natural News with Mike Adams. I bet you're behind that one.
So I caution everybody not to think of wheat as a vehicle for gluten. That's confusing to a lot of people. So wheat has over 10,000 proteins in it. Gluten's one of them. So there's a lot more in modern wheat than gluten. I tell people that because they say, well, gee, if I'm gluten-free, I can eat gluten-free foods. So that leads people down the path of cornstarch, rice starch, tapioca starch, and potato starch, among the few foods that raise blood sugar even higher than wheat. So we got to be careful when people talk about gluten. So it's not gluten elimination I'm after. It's wheat elimination.
I have the same reaction from oats than I do from wheat. So is that commonality, the gliadin?
It's probably a cross-reactivity with the avidin protein in oats, probably. You know, one of the problems we have is in non-celiac people, which is, of course, 99% of the population, there's this notion of gluten sensitivity. So the newest data, it's very flawed. The newest data suggests that 7, 8, or 9% of the population has a celiac-like response to the gliadin or the gluten protein of wheat, but it doesn't cause the same degree of destruction of the gastrointestinal tract. It causes a lot of symptoms, like diarrhea, cramps, and bloating. It doesn't cause the same kind of destruction that you would see in a biopsy. So some gastroenterologists oppose what's called gluten sensitivity. Now, unfortunately, they don't even know if it's due to the gluten. It might be due, say, to that wheat germ gluten in, which is unrelated to gluten. So that catch-all phrase of gluten sensitivity really is kind of a made-up diagnosis. Nobody knows that it's truly due to gluten. It might be due to something else. It might be due to gliadin within gluten. It could be due to something else entirely, like wheat germ gluten, or other proteins. So we have this uncertainty about what gluten sensitivity means. But it does mean you shouldn't eat wheat.
Now, I know from your book that you did an experiment, the classic physician testing on yourself experiment, where you tried einkorn versus wheat. Could you talk about that a little bit? And then that leads to the question, would you eat einkorn today?
Sure, Richard. Yeah, I do fear that some people interpreted my little experiment as an endorsement of Einkorn, which was not meant to be. It was just a graphic illustration of how different these things can be. So all I did was I got a pound of Einkorn grain and a pound of modern organic wheat grain. So I got both grain, I ground them both down to flour, and I made loaves of bread from both of them. And I only used yeast and water and egg. I did not use any sweeteners, nothing else. So I wanted to make it as clean as possible. So I did a simple thing. I made loaves of bread. I weighed out 4 ounces, 2 big slices, and I ate them. The first day I ate 2 slices of the Einkorn bread, checked my blood sugar prior, it was 84. And then 1 hour after, that's when the peak of blood sugar occurs, and it was 110. So a modest rise, as you'd expect from a carbohydrate. And I felt fine. I should mention that I'm very wheat intolerant. I get very sick if I eat modern wheat. Next day, I tried the same thing with 4 ounces, exact same quantity, of modern organic wheat. Blood sugar prior, identical, 84. 1 hour later, 167. So sky high with great health effects when that happens. And I got sick. I get mind fog. I get gastrointestinal distress. I can't think straight. I was essentially useless for about 48 hours. I couldn't even write or read for those 48 hours. So, and that brought back all these nasty memories of how I used to feel for many, many years. So that's hardly proof. It's just one person's experience. But I thought it was a very good illustration of how different these things have become. But unfortunately, some people interpret that to mean that Einkorn must be good. So this is why I say over and over again, let's not be guilty what the nutritionists or the dietitians often do, and that is think that something less bad must be good. So the illustration I use is what if we applied this to cigarettes? So if we said that unfiltered cigarettes are bad for us and filtered cigarettes are less bad for us, by the logic of nutrition, we should smoke filtered cigarettes. But that's not how science works. That's not how nature works. So we always have to keep in mind that older grains and ancient grains, like Einkorn, are less bad, but they may not be entirely benign. That's why we go back to when humans first started eating wild grains, such as Einkorn, and we saw very significant health problems, even with the ancient grains.
About how long should somebody start noticing when they go off wheat? Are they going to go through a withdrawal, but are they going to be clearer in like 6 days or 2 days? Or?
So it's very variable and varies from one individual to the next. So a person who doesn't experience withdrawal phenomenon can be clearer within 48 hours, 72 hours, very typically. If you're going through withdrawal, you will not be clearer. You might be quite miserable, in fact, during the withdrawal. Though the withdrawals can often end, very typically ends abruptly. It's an interesting phenomenon. They'll say, I feel awful. I have awful headaches. I'm nauseated. I'm having a hard time eating. I can't work. I can't focus or concentrate. I'm crabby. I'm yelling at people. I'm sleeping a lot. And then, bam, one day, maybe it's 5 days later, they wake up and they feel like $1 million. And they say, you know what? I haven't felt like this in 20 years. I feel 20 years younger. I'm alert. I'm clear. I have this. I can't stop. I have so much energy. It's a really interesting phenomenon. So it's very, very variable. Typical responses, though, would be acid reflux, gone within 3 to 5 days. The most common form of joint pain due to wheat is in the fingers and wrists, and that's often gone within 3 to 5 days. A lot of people have large joint arthritis and pain, such as low back, hip, and knee. That doesn't respond quite as consistently, though it does respond to a lot of people, but takes usually at least 30 days, if not 90 days, to get started. That seems to be due to a much more complex inflammatory response that has to respond. So there's all different time courses for response. Neurological phenomena, such as cerebellar ataxia and peripheral neuropathy, two of the most common conditions from wheat consumption that lead to such things as incoordination, stumbling, and incontinence, those require at least 6 months, usually, to respond, because neurological tissue takes a long, long time to heal.
I know Richard wanted to talk to you about the cellular ataxia. We have about 5 minutes left. And for our listening audience, in case we don't ask your question, Dr. Davis does have a blog. Could you tell people how to reach in and ask questions or see answers on your blog?
Oh, sure, Sherry. The blog is a Wheat Belly blog, wheatbellyblog.com. And there's a comment section. Preferably people post comments where it's relevant, so there's a logical flow of the discussion. But that's where you can find a lot of these things, including, by the way, recipes. So people say, well, you know, this is all well and fine, but I've got holidays. I've got entertaining. I've got kids and grandkids and a fussy husband to deal with. And so one of the things I do is I show people how to recreate foods with benign, healthy ingredients so that you can have pizza for the kids. You can have coffee cake for company. You can have cheesecake at the holidays, et cetera. So nearly, not all, but nearly all foods from the wheat and grain world can be recreated with healthy, benign ingredients that are wheat and grain-free and sugar-free.
Well, I know that just looking through your site, I'm going to run out and get your cookbook because all my kids are sensitive to wheat and all my grandkids and great-grandkids.
Yeah.
Richard, do you want to go ahead and ask your question about the ataxia?
Well, I think he talked a bit about the ataxia, and it was really, he in terms of, you know, talking about neuropathic pain elimination and clearing it up, that really that it was a great part of the book where you were talking about it and how people were having these things and they'd be coming to you and be having these, you know, Western, classic Western medicine like, I don't know, you know, get a cane, get a walker, I don't know what to tell you. And this is where you came up with, you know, seeing these amazing results from people stopping wheat.
Isn't it amazing? We're talking about the effect of healthy whole grains and its effect on causing destruction to the brain. And it can be seen. It can be seen on an MRI. You can see an atrophied, shrunken cerebellum, that the center that controls autonomic or automatic functions and coordination and movement and bladder and bowel control. So average age of onset, 52 years old. So we're not talking about dementia in the elderly. We're talking about a common condition, and it seems to be increasing. So we're talking about a very, very serious matter. So, peripheral neuropathy, we're talking about nervous system. You know, this is a very, very important subject. Seizures are caused typically in children by consumption of wheat. You can imagine how much I cringed when there was a push, an initiative to increase the reliance on healthy whole grains in school kids. Yet, even if wheat was only about celiac disease, of which only 10% have been diagnosed, 90% thereby not diagnosed, why would they push healthy whole grains in a population for which they haven't even begun to screen kids for hidden celiac disease? So there's so many mistakes being made in this world of cut your fat, eat more healthy whole grains.
I've heard, years ago I was working with, talking with a nutritionist, actually Crispin Sullivan, and we talked about what I will call the Kellogg's conspiracy. That would seem to be the beginning of the, you know, carbohydrates are our friends.
Yes, I fear too much of the message is being controlled by deep-pocketed big food and agribusiness. I think that's exactly right.
Well, people can buy your book, Wheat Belly, at Barnes & Noble and Amazon, or just about any place good and wonderful books are sold. There's a lot in your book that I need to know more about, but we are out of time. I particularly want to know about the advanced glycation end product because that is scary.
I think we're hearing a lot more about that as the science progresses, too. And it's also a very, very interesting aspect of the whole anti-aging notion. So there's a lot of good things to talk about in that area.
Well, I can feel that we would like to have you back many more times, so the more time you have to spend with us, and we'll put these up on our archives, and we'll send them out on Facebook. We'll ask our people to send it out on Facebook, and we'll ask them to buy both your books and anything else you want to write, because you sound like an absolutely amazing person.
Well, thank you, Sherry, and thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. Thank you. I think it would be very fun to have you back on and actually talk about, you know, the making of recipes and foods, so that people, because I know how overwhelming it can be when you start talking to somebody about, you know, like you say, if you have, it's one thing to be an adult and say, I'm going to stop eating wheat, but it's another thing to have kids who are like, where's my pizza? Where are my cookies? Where are my treats? Where is it? Oh, that's gone from your life now. Good luck. So,
absolutely.
So So to give people alternatives is really, I think, a powerful tool.
And it's a very fun conversation, too.
Wonderful. Excellent.
Thank you, Dr. Davis.
Thank you, Dr. Davis.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Richard.
Have
Take
a great
care.
Day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, that was great again. I hadn't listened to that in a while, and that is really such an informative show with Davis talking about wheat and all the spookiness about wheat. Man, makes me want to, like, never think about pizza again.
Yikes.
Well, we can let people know that we have worked on this, and that phosphatidylserine will help the addiction to wheat and the craving. And you can get that at your health food store. The serine helps make the bile salts so you can digest fats. So you might want to cut down on fats a little bit temporarily so the body won't need to make the bile salts, you know, from your gallbladder, so you won't crave the wheat. It's a vicious circle. Did you have something else to add, Richard?
No, it does make me, you know, bookmark right away that I believe that Dr. Davis since then has put together a cookbook, and I think we should have him back and have that conversation that you threw out at the very end and have him talk about foods and, you know, what his ongoing research is showing.
Now, we've been doing some of that all along with sorghum flour and things like that. It certainly is an issue in my life. Almost all of my children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren even, have a reaction to wheat with skin dryness, and it breaks open and gets oozy and looks like hives. So that reaction to wheat is very ugly and very uncomfortable. So I agree with him wholeheartedly, even though some people are even laughing at him. Monsanto is trying to take him down by just really negative press, which is, I guess, to be expected. Even when you work or look at a court of law, if the evidence isn't good, then you attack the person. And that's what they're doing with Dr. Davis. And I'd like to see it stopped. So the more that we can have him on the show, and this was from our archives. We're live now, but this was from our archives. Okay, somebody is posting something. Back. Whenever you hit the important... Okay, so somebody's putting some stuff in the chat about elimination, too, and getting rid of wheat. Wheat can cause considerable constipation for some people. We had a lady in last week, and she hadn't had a regular bowel movement for 20 years, and she only had an elimination every 5 or 6 days when it was absolutely necessary or she had to have an enema. And all over her chart, she had this extreme issue with wheat. Gliadin? I don't know how he pronounced that. And gluten, too. So for all of your patience and staying with us, one of the things that we were going to do this evening was give away one of our softwares to the audience. We had planned to do neuroplasticity tonight, and one of the things that it's in Dr. Davis's book is how wheat can also damage the brain and poison the brain. So we have the software. We will probably be doing it next week instead of Direction for Truth. This is important. I really want to look at it. We're going to bring you the foods and nutrients that help you with having a whole brain. Neuroplasticity means neural, brain, plasticity. How agile is your brain? And I think Dr. Davis's advice is also how agile is your bowel, and the bowel and the brain work very, very closely together. So if you would like to be a part of that drawing, just write to info, I-N-F-O, and I will put this in the chat to everyone. I think I've only been chatting over here to Brian because he's been having lots of trouble. And I do apologize. My computer, microphone, and computer just fell apart at 2 minutes, too. So info at soundhealth, sherryoptions.com. And if you can't get through there, just write to me at Sherry, S-H-A-R-R-Y, Edwards, at gmail.com. And I'm going to go ahead and have them put up some of the sites that we had prepared for you for tonight. And one of it was about the shootings. And Mike Adams did a, I don't know, a literature search, a compilation of all of these mass shootings, and found out that they're being used to get rid of your guns and to not allow anybody to have a gun. Well, what would you do in the Texas desert with a rattlesnake or a bear in Alaska or a bear in Montana? And you're not allowed to have a gun to even protect your family from these wild animals, wolves, coyotes, things that attack your cattle, your farm pets. It just seems ridiculous that they're blaming it on guns. This is one of the things that Mike Adams says, and I'm quoting, "Interestingly, only conservative media has begun to cover these links between psych drugs and mass killing. The liberal media is largely running interference for Big Pharma, blocking any such stories while desperately attempting to place the blame for all these killings on a physical object, a gun, rather than the drug-warped minds of the young men who made the decision to pull the trigger. Guns don't shoot by themselves. Someone must make the decision to point it and pull the trigger. Point in fact, no gun has ever pulled its own trigger. The trigger must be pulled." Well, he's repeating the same thing. "The decision is made in the brain, and that brain is intoxicated with prescribed medications and wheat allergies," and we're going to talk about that, "that alter brain function. Thus, the prescription drugs play a crucial role in the decision chain that leads to these mass killings. No one would blame an automobile for fatalities caused by a drunk driver, for example. The alcohol impairs the brain, and that brain is making the driver decisions that caused the fatal accident. The object, the car, didn't kill anyone. It was a combination of an intoxicated brain and extremely poor decision-making on part of the person absorbing the substance." And you can go to naturalnews.com and put in links to shootings. One of the best ones is the school shootings, nutrition, and psychiatric drugs. I don't know if I can grab that quickly and put it in the chat for you, but I'll certainly put it on our site, soundhealthoptions.com, about the announcement for this show. I looked up some of these things that Mike Adams reported, and he looked up the Dylan Roof, the guy from Charlotte, North Carolina, that went into the church, and he was on Xanax and looks like Suizone. Well, when we looked up some of these, Zoloft is one of them, Luvox, Prozac. When you look at Zoloft, it interferes with dopamine, which is the feel-good chemicals of the body. When you're in love, you have great dopamine. And it also, the Zoloft, competes with thyroid hormones, which helps you think straight. The Luvox interferes with magnesium cell salts, so muscle twitches and muscles not working right. Prozac interferes with calcium, cell salts, magnesium, thyroid hormones, again, vitamin D receptors. So these are the things that we're going to bring to you in full report when we come back together next week. We're going to do another happy hour and do actual vocal profiles live demonstration using our new software. And if you want to be part of the drawing to have the software for yourself, it's info at soundhealthoptions.com. www.ataxiaoptions.com. Richard, any final thoughts? I'm going to go type in this article for people.
That's a great reference article. Considering how it worked out, I really enjoyed re-listening to that interview with Davis. He's inspiring and just smart enough or technical enough to, like, scare me and go, ooh, wheat. Because you know how it's wheat is opportunistic. The whole I forgot about the opiate receptor site effect from wheat and how it creates that craving, addictive quality. So, I mean, it was good. He's a, you know, good researcher.
There was another article I found about prescription medications causing this kind of mental upset and how the soldiers couldn't get the marijuana to calm themselves down, but they could have these thousands and thousands of dollars of prescriptions that just pickled their brain. So that was another article. I will put those all in our website announcement. So to find that, go to soundhealthoptions.com and go to the radio. I'll try to open it up here really quick before we have to leave. Go to radio and happy hour, and where it talks about neuroplasticity is a necessity that we be able to keep our brain in good running order. Are you taking care of your brain, providing the appropriate nutrients and proteins so that it can thrive and guide you to peak ethical and physical performance? So that's what we'll be bringing you next week. And Richard, you have a special guest for Sunday too, don't you?
Shelley Kareff, who chose, after being in the telecom industry for 30 years, and prior to that in the steel industry, to move he and his wife, and I think some of his children come and go, to Ecuador, buy acreage and grow organic food, because he just was, like, fed up with what was happening here. And so he has a program down there, not just is he growing food, but he also has a program down there so he can have apprentices, can come and train. And so we'll be talking to him about why he chose to do that after being here for many, many years.
We've talked about that a lot. It's not a free country. We don't even own our own water.
Don't even get these. They're rah, 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 rah. Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
I just read an article that there's a mass exodus out of Southern California because there's no water. And all of the properties and all that are just going to dust monetarily and literally. It's like somebody deliberately wants California to die. We should get a show about that.
That's a show about that. You know, first I think we should just, you know, these things, these dictums that I see from various goober types in California saying, oh, you know, in 6 months you'll have to stop watering your lawn or stuff like that. It's like tomorrow. Stop watering your lawn today. That's it. No lawn, stop. Because that was the number one use of water in California. Lawn watering, that kind of thing. These things where they put out legislation, say, "Oh yes, by 2016 we'll have," you know what?
Well, okay. Along with they're taking away their guns and mandated vaccinations, why would anybody stay in California? Unless they were an actor, I guess. But all that's going to move. Water is the presence of life. Then you can't live very long at all without water, and the government has, in some states, is so sneakily passed these laws that they own the water, even the water dripping off your roof. We had a show about that. A man was arrested for trying to catch his own rainwater and feed his garden. So we do lots of shows in hopes of helping you have a better life and to be better informed. We hope to see you Sunday when we talk to, and I don't remember his name,
Shelley Kareff.
Kareff. He is Richard's friend and guest. I'm just going to be there just to listen. So we'll see all of you then. And thank you for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for putting up with these glitches in our computer. and we'll see you on Sunday.
See you on Sunday, everybody. Have a great week. Bye-bye.